Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Can wishing alone make you happy and prosperous? A number of self-help gurus in recent years have suggested that just believing you are destined for wealth, career success, or true love might be enough to attract those things. It's a comforting idea, and it certainly has sold a lot of books. But my guest today will remind us that there is no scientific evidence to back up the so-called law of attraction. Yet there is solid research to explain the conditions that make us more or less likely to work successfully for what we really want. Gabrielle Ottingen is professor of psychology at New York University and the University of Hamburg. Her new book is called Rethinking Positive Thinking: Inside the New Science of Motivation. Gabrielle, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me. This is a big honor that I can speak here.
How did the cult of optimism, as you call it, take hold in America in particular?
Well, the cult of optimism has been around since a long time, and it's so seducing to think that things will just work out by thinking about it. So it is a temptation which we all fall in from time to time, that we just want to believe that just dreaming about desired futures, which will actually make us achieve them.
You note the fact when you first arrived in the U.S. That Americans will say they're fine no matter what's going on, whereas in Germany, if you're not feeling good, you'll say, I'm not feeling good, or my roommate's driving me crazy, or that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, in Germany, people are kind of more frank immediately at the beginning of the interaction, whereas here, you know, the first interaction, the kind of preliminary encounter, is just positive. It's good. And I really appreciated that when I came here, because it puts you in a good mood. People just sort of are sort of saying the positive thing before they actually go into deeper conversations.
And yet there is something strange about this almost childlike belief that we have that all we have to do is really want something and magically it will come to us.
Well, that's a good kind of pleasurable idea for the moment, to think about positive futures and think that you are already there in the positive future. But it gives us pleasure at the moment, and it gives us often also kind of a good time when we need to wait somewhere, or when we just sort of a little bored. Then you can kind of elucidate the future with your positive dreams and fantasies. The problem only comes if realizing these fantasies and realizing these dreams is a little bit more complex, when it's effortful, because then just thinking about it won't bring you there.
So too much dreaming can interfere with our motivation to get things done.
That's right. So if I just dream about it and then believe that just dreaming brings me there, nothing will happen. I will be kind of happy for the moment. But what we found is that people who positively fantasize about reaching kind of complex problems, such as losing weight, that these people actually lose less weight when you really look at it later on. So, for example, women in a weight loss program who fantasize positively about losing weight after the program lost fewer pounds 3 months and a year and even 2 years later. And, for example, university graduates who fantasized about a kind of successful, easy transition into work life, they earned fewer dollars 2 years later and they received fewer job offers.
The weight loss study was interesting because you found that the participants who hoped to lose weight, expected to lose weight, lost more than those who said, there's no way I'm going to lose weight. But they lost significantly less than the ones who said, yeah, I think I will, but it might be hard.
Right. In our early works, we distinguished between two forms of thinking about the future. And one is the expectancies. So can I expect to lose weight? Looking back in my past, my performance history, I can extrapolate for the future And these are expectancies. Expectancies are judgments about whether you can reach something or whether you cannot. For example, whether you can reasonably expect that you lose some pounds based on your past performance. And these judgments, they actually predict positively, meaning they predict that you do basically the same thing in the future. So, for example, if students who did really well in school, they have expectancies that they will do well in school later on. So that helps them. However, when you have fantasies and daydreams and free thoughts and images about doing well in school, they might be independent of these expectancies. They might just be fantasies about the sheer events, the sheer desired future. And they do not come from these past experiences. They come more from their needs and from the desires people have. And these fantasies, if you get really kind of involved in them and you only get involved in them, they are harsh for actually reaching them. They are negative predictors for actually reaching the desired future. So if you distinguish between different forms of thinking about the future, you actually realize, or we found in our experiments and in our correlational studies, that while expectancies that are based on past performance, they positively predict success, these daydreams and fantasies, the more positive they were, the less well people did actually reaching the desired future.
We should be clear that you recognize some benefits to kind of relentless optimism, particularly for people who find themselves in situations they are not in any position to change. And there was a study done of residents of East Berlin before the fall of the wall.
Right. Well, in East Berlin, before the fall of the wall, the question really was whether people actually believed in a positive future or whether they believed in a negative future and whether this is actually connected to more or less depression. That was our research topic. And what we found is that when we analyzed newspaper reports about the Olympic Games in Sarajevo a long, long time ago, and that actually, though the actual facts were kind of speaking that the East Berlin people did, the Olympics did better, they were more pessimistic. So they were less, they had less positive expectations than in the West Berlin papers. And then similarly, what we found is that in East Berlin, when you looked at nonverbal behavior symptomatic for depression, that in East Berlin, you find more depressive affect and more symptoms of depression than in West Berlin. That was in the mid-80s, long before the fall of the wall. So it seems that in East Berlin, despite that the facts really sort of spoke for a reason to believe in the positive future, still they had kind of low expectations as compared to West Berlin newspapers. And at the same time, when we looked at patrons in bars, at their nonverbal behavior, they found, or we found, more depressive affect in the East Berlin patrons than in the West Berlin patrons.
What happened when you studied college students who admitted to having a crush on a stranger but hadn't yet done anything about it?
Right. Well, when the students in the interpersonal domain, we found the same pattern as in the university grads and in the women who wanted to lose weight. We found that people or students who had a crush on a person of the opposite sex, who positively fantasized about actually getting together with that other person, that they did less well in actually getting together with that person. So the more positively that daydreamed and sort of kind of illustrated in their mind getting together with the kind of adored one or with the crushee, the less likely they were actually getting together with that person 3 months later.
Well, explain why that might be the case.
Well, we reasoned at that time. At that time, we didn't really know so well what the actually what the mechanisms are. But we reasoned at that time, and we found indications in what the students actually wrote in their positive fantasies when we asked them to write down their fantasies, that they dream getting together with that other person. But by dreaming about it, they feign already being there. They think they already are there. They are together with that person. They don't get too much motivated anymore to actually go the hard way of approaching that person and also to risk some rejection. So these people kind of enjoyed getting together with that other person already prematurely, right now, in their mind. And therefore, they were not really motivated to go the hard way anymore. Also, they were not prepared to actually go the obstacles and to overcome the obstacles and the hindrances and the temptations on the way to approaching that person. So they stayed dreaming, but never really took the step which is necessary to actually get together with their crushee.
So our brains essentially benefit too much from the fantasy and keep us complacent?
Well, I would say the mind and the emotions benefit from actually, you know, enjoying the future prematurely. And when you enjoy it, then what we found then in later work, when we actually experimentally induced positive fantasies, that when people positively fantasize, they get relaxed. So their energy goes down. And when your energy goes down, you're not really prepared anymore to actually go the hard way and to think and to plan ahead for the obstacles, because you don't see any obstacles. You don't feel any temptations. You don't foresee that this will be a hard way. So you just enjoy it right here. Great. It puts you in a pleasant mood. You enjoy right now what you might realize, but if you want to realize it, you need to go a hard way. So why actually go the hard way?
Does this explain why things like social media and video games and even TV can become such a time suck for people if they're not careful, because we sort of feel the rewards of those things without actually sticking our necks out in real life?
That could very well be that, you know, other means other than fantasies, other than positive fantasies, which achieve the same purpose of, you know, just sort of having it pleasant at the moment, that they are leading to the fact that you don't go the hard way. And, you know, you've kind of engaged in, you get, like you say, you get drawn into the pleasant moment. And then once you're drawn into the pleasant moment, why then plan ahead and just think about the difficulties?
It seems like a cruel irony that what feels really good isn't necessarily good for us.
Yeah, that is an irony. And I think this is one of the big traps we can fall in, that we think, you know, it feels good or it feels right, and therefore it is good or it is right. That is not necessarily so. If we take as a parameter not just feeling good, but actually achieving the desired future or what we want in real life. So the hard way to go and achieve the desired future is sometimes not very pleasant.
We'll talk in a few minutes about pulling out of those traps with my guest, Gabrielle Ottingen, professor of psychology at New York University and the University of Hamburg. Her new book is called Rethinking Positive Thinking: Inside the New Science of Motivation. If you've got a question or a comment, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education with courses in art, culture, history, communication, photography, and film studies. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Gabrielle Ottingen, professor of psychology at New York University and the University of Hamburg. Her new book is called Rethinking Positive Thinking, Inside the New Science of Motivation. You can be part of the conversation at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. Okay, Gabrielle, we don't want to get carried away with them, but we all have dreams. We all have goals. What is the benefit to anticipating the ways in which we might encounter a struggle in trying to fulfill our goals?
Well, we talked about positive fantasies and daydreams, and we talked about that they might hinder us from actually achieving the desired future. But on the other hand, if we complement them by anticipating the obstacles in us that might hold us back from achieving these daydreams and from realizing the desired future, then we might be much better off. So there are certain elements in daydreaming which actually help us explore the wishes and the desires of the future. So if we daydream, we can understand what actually belongs to us and where we belong to, and we can awaken kind of latent wishes which we might not have actually thought of for quite a while. So daydreaming, if we start with daydreaming about the desired future, that's not a bad thing in itself. It's only holds us back from realizing these daydreams where we only daydream. But if we then sort of anticipate what is it in us that holds us back from actually achieving these daydreams, from identifying the obstacles and the hindrances in us that stop us from realizing these daydreams, then we are much better off, because then we understand that we need to do something. And then if chances of success are high, we fully engage and we actually do everything to reach the goal or reach the desired future. And if the obstacles are such that we would say, well, it's not worth it, or that we would say, well, these are just too formidable, we can either adjust the wish or we can actually say, let go. No, this is too much in my life at the moment. I will free my resources for other enterprises, for other goals and wishes. So what we call mental contrasting of the future and the reality, the obstacles of reality, does to us, it helps us prioritize what is actually belonging to us and what we can do, and understand what is actually not so important to us and what we better let go or delegate or sort of postpone to a more opportune time. So the idea really is that by imagining the future and also identifying and anticipating in our imagery the obstacles of reality, that we then fully engage, we fully love something, we go for it, or we say, okay, let's not do it now, let's free the resources for something which is more promising.
It turns out that one thing that is really helpful is using if-then statements. Explain how they work.
Well, if-then plans are a concept which has been discovered by Peter Goldwitzer, also from the New York University. And if-then plans are statements that connect a situation, if situation, then I will, behavior to actually overcome that situation or deal with that situation. These are kind of statements, and these statements connect the situation and the behavior, so that if we then come into that situation, we will actually behave in a way to deal with that situation. And that's a plan which we actually sort of combine then with what we call mental contrasting to have a strategy which we then call WHOOP, which is identify a wish, identify the outcome and imagine the outcome, identify the obstacle that stands in the way of reaching the wish and experiencing the outcome and imagining that obstacle, and then supplementing this mental contrasting with if-then plans in the form of if obstacle, then I will perform an effective behavior to overcome obstacle. So that's a these are basically a combination of two strategies which have been found to be successful in experimental research and where we know a lot about the different mechanisms. We know a lot about the mechanisms of mental contrasting and we know a lot about the mechanisms of implementation intentions or if-then plans. And by combining it, we make a particularly strong case to actually achieve our wishes and change our behavior in the direction we actually want to change our behavior.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Andrew in Farmers Branch. Hello, Andrew.
Hi. My question for your speaker was if she had effects, positive things have on.
Hold on, Andrew, start over. You're breaking up a little bit. You had a question about what again? I'm sorry.
The possible positive or the possible effects that positive thinking might have on, say, things like people getting mortgages or student loans, that they might not think about the possible consequences in the future, especially in America.
Very interesting. Thanks for your call. Gabrielle, what do you think?
I didn't really get the question. Can you?
I think he was asking about.
Because it was kind of hard to hear.
Yeah, people taking out loans and maybe not thinking about the consequences of what might happen if they were unable to pay. And does positive thinking lead people into making, if I understand correctly, risky decisions?
Right. This is actually a very good point and a very important point because this positive thinking or positive daydreaming would actually lead to risky decisions in the sense that you actually do things without understanding that negative consequences will happen and without understanding that actually using these mortgages and actually also using reasonably these kind of whatever shopping items on loan, that this might actually involve very much effort and responsible behavior, and just sort of taking it will not help us on the long run. It might suffice us on the short run, but it will not help us on the long run. And this is actually exactly a question of pertaining to this research, because what we find is that, you know, if you have very easy tasks, these positive fantasies are enough. You just grab it. But then when you need to solve complex tasks and when you need to solve effortful tasks, then the positive fantasies are detrimental because they do not let you consider the hardships, neither on the way of reaching the desired future nor the hardships in terms of consequences.
On the other side of that, I wonder if a lot of us, without even realizing it, do a lot of if-then planning. For example, there are people who take out risky loans. There are other people who say, okay, I need to save money, and if I lose my job, then I will dip into my savings.
Well, the if-then planning is not if I lose my job, then I will dip in my savings. The if-then plan is more if I have a situation that is opportune or this is helpful for actually reaching a goal, then I will behave in a goal-directed manner. So it is a planning strategy that helps us reach our goals. There are many if-then plans. If behavior, then consequence, or if behavior, then behavior. The if-then plans we are talking about, or Peter Golwitz is talking about, is if a situation happens that is opportune to reach my desired goal, then I will act in a goal-directed manner. So it is a very special kind of if-then statement, and it is very helpful to supplement this mental contrasting with it, because mental contrasting actually leads people to fully commit to this, to reach the desired future or to reach the goal. And it also specifies the obstacle on the way to reach the desired future. And then you can actually put the if-then statement on top of it, because if-then plans only work when people actually are determined to reach a desired future. And when they have identified a situation or an obstacle to actually reaching the desired future. So it is a prerequisite for this if situation, then goal-directed behavior to work. And that's the reason why they make if-then, why mental contrasting makes if-then plan more effective. And on the other side, if-then plans very often help mental contrasting to overcome these very difficult obstacles. So it is two strategies which are combined in a way that they are actually supportive of each other.
All right, let's go back to WOOP. This stands again for wish, outcome, obstacle, and plan. Can you clarify for us the difference? Why is it important to have the wish and then the best possible outcome? How are those two elements different from one another?
Right. The wish would be something which you can think of, which you might have kind of dormant or latent in you. Very often when we ask people, identify a wish which is really dear to you, which is important to you. Very often they come up with wishes which they haven't been kind of daring to think anymore. Mm. So then they come up with wishes. They can be, you know, 24-hour wishes, or there can be a wish for the next week, there can be a wish for the next 3 months, there can be a wish, you know, a real-life wish. But first you need to identify what is really dear to you, what is important to you, what is actually my wish, more than, you know, what other people want me to do. What is it that I want that belongs to me? And then in order to understand in your mental imagery what the wish would really mean for you, you identify the outcome. You say, now what would happen if I realized that wish? What would be the best outcome? And that can be a feeling or it can be a positive a consequence. But what is it really that would be so nice to reach the wish? And then you can explore the wish. And once you then imagine that outcome, you really kind of mentally experience the benefit of reaching that wish. And then you are really kind of, you feel kind of passionate and you mentally imagine something which you did not allow yourself to imagine since a long time very often. So people don't give themselves this kind of mental space to actually identify the wish and then feel, what is it? What is the best thing if I realize that wish and then mentally imagine it? So that they really understand and kind of explore whether fulfilling that wish and experiencing the outcome of that wish is something that they really want. And once they really understand, oh, yeah, that's what I want. Yeah, that's my thing. Then you can come and say, oh, what holds you back, actually? What does hold you back from fulfilling that wish and experiencing that outcome? And then you come and identify the obstacle.
Okay, let's put some of this to use. We have an interesting tweet here from Mary who says, as a writer, I imagine full scenes on my commute and I'm no longer motivated to actually write them. I thought I was a crazy slacker. She's not asking for help, but what would you suggest to someone like Mary who wants to actually maintain the motivation beyond just thinking up these great scenes and actually put them into words?
Yeah, this is a great example. So you have the writer and she's sitting in the subway or in the train and she's sort of dreaming about, and she really sort of, let's say, identified that writing that would be really so nice and would feel good. And then you can say, now what holds you back? What holds me back of doing it? What is it in me that holds me back from actually writing that? And once you identify that obstacle, then you understand much more why you then leave the train and not write anything anymore. So you identify what is it in you that holds you back. And, you know, I can't say, nobody from the outside can say what the obstacle really is. The person herself needs to say, okay, this is it in me what holds me back? That is it what stops me. And very often these things are, you know, kind of emotions or feelings or anxiety or things you usually are kind of dancing around or confronting yourself with. So very often, you know, some excuses need to be overcome to understand what is actually the obstacle in me. But once you understand the obstacle and you have imagined the obstacle, then you understand much more what holds you back from actually achieving that wish or realizing that wish, in this case, from actually going home and then actually sitting down and writing what you imagine to write. But identifying that obstacle is really critical in terms of making yourself fulfill your wish. And then if you want, you could say, okay, once I identified and imagined the obstacle, in your imagery, very often it's getting very clear what you need to do in order to overcome the obstacle. It's getting obvious, and you sometimes think, oh, gee, why did not understand that before? It's so obvious. So, and then you can say, if obstacle occurs, then I will perform the behavior to overcome the obstacle. So let's say the obstacle would be anxiety related or the fear of being evaluated or something. Then you could say, you imagine this kind of fear, you imagine the anxiety. And then afterwards you would say, okay, if the anxiety occurs, then I will sit down and immediately start writing.
Gabrielle Ottingen is my guest. She is professor of psychology at New York University and the University of Hamburg. Her new book is called Rethinking Positive Thinking, Inside the New Science of Motivation. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education with courses in art, culture, history, communication, photography, and film studies. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Gabrielle Ottingen, who is professor of psychology at New York University and at the University of Hamburg. Her new book is called Rethinking Positive Thinking, Inside the New Science of Motivation. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Gabrielle, is there a difference between long-term positive thinking and short-term positive thinking? For example, a golfer might need to have sort of positive thoughts in the moment about sinking a putt, but in the long term, maybe she needs to think more about the shortcomings of her game.
Right. We were thinking that at the beginning, too. But then when we looked at our experimental data, we find that WHOOP and mental contrasting works for positive thinking, whether it's short-term or long-term. So you can apply WHOOP, for example, with respect to the next 24 hours. You know, what is your wish for the end of the day? Or you can even apply it for a presentation you give. Or for an interview you give, you say, now what is my wish really in this interview? What is my wish for the meeting with my colleague today? So you can actually choose the frame, the time frame of your wish as you wish. Whatever your concern is, whatever you need is at the moment, you choose your own wish. It is actually your wish, and you can actually take this strategy of, it's a four-step strategy, wish, outcome, obstacle, plan, in order to solve your short-term wishes, your trivial wishes, or your long-term wishes, let's say, you know, what professional path I should choose, or what country I should live in, or whatever long-term concern you have. You know, how much should I save? How much should I, invest in this or that? Or in relationship issues, for example, and overcoming fears. So you can actually take any wish which is dear to you. The main thing is that you take a wish which is actually dear to you. To you, not other people, but to you. What is it in me that I really want to achieve? What is it in my life? So no difference in terms of whether you can apply WHOOP for short-term wishes or for long-term wishes. And that makes this tool a very helpful tool for daily life, because you can actually flexibly adjust it to your own wishes and needs. And it's also helpful because it works, and we know that from a lot of experimental studies, by inducing non-conscious processes. So it's a conscious imagery exercise, but it inflicts non-conscious processes, cognitive processes, and also motivational processes. So, for example, energization, which we measure by subjective feelings or by systolic blood pressure. So these non-conscious processes, these processes outside of awareness, actually then mediate. They then predict the behavior change which we want to achieve. And so we know it's a helpful tool because it involves imagery, not kind of cumbersome thinking. It's just that we let our imagery pass by our mind. And then it inflicts to our own mind and body non-conscious processes, which then make for the behavior change. So that's the reason why it's a kind of helpful, practical tool which you can put in our pocket or in our mind, and we can take it along as we go through the day. So it's not a strategy where we can be super happy every day and it's just like a pill you throw in and then you're happy. That's not the issue. The issue is that we have a kind of daily friend, a friend which we can take for our everyday concerns, and which makes it very clear to us what we can do and what we want to do and what is actually not belonging to us, and what we should put on the back burner, and how we actually then can implement our wishes.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Jim on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Chris. Thank you again. Really interesting show. I have a comment and a question real quick. I think Dr. Attingen was talking about it just now about our unconscious or subconscious. I think part of what we're talking about is hang on just a second. I'm getting some feedback here into my vehicle.
Okay.
I think part of what we're talking about is a developmental issue that early on some people learn basic trust and feel secure, and they learn that people can empathize with them. And I think that's really important to what we're talking about. Also, I wanted to ask your guest if she's familiar with the work of Adam Seligman here in this country.
Martin Seligman? Is that who you're thinking of? Jim? Okay, I think we've lost Jim, but I know that you know of Seligman's work.
Well, actually, I started my work working together with Marty Seligman, and he was always very interested in optimism before he even came up with the positive psychology movement. He was interested in optimism, and when I started working with him, he kind of sort of defined hope and optimism in the same term. And I always thought, hope is something different than optimism. Optimism is if I can justifiably, through my expectations, can look in the future positively. But hope is when I can actually generate these daydreams in spite that I have low expectancies. And that's where all my work started. And no, these hopeful thoughts, they are still very effective in the moment. If I don't have any action, freedom, meaning if I can't act at all, then positively fantasizing is a good solution to just keep me up and keep my mood up. But if I can act and if I have the freedom to choose things and to act towards my wishes, then what we need is a self-regulation tool such as WHOOP, our mental contrasting, and the if-then plans. Because then we can take this tool in order to actively actually achieve our wishes or to actively dismiss these wishes. So if we live in a society where we can actually build our own future, then it is important to have such a self-regulation tool. And with respect to the question of empathy, actually we show that mental contrasting with implementation in terms of what we call WHOOP actually increases perspective taking and cooperation and actually finding a solution that fits both the partner and yourself. So in several experiments, we have shown that WHOOP actually helps to create these win-win situations where the other partner gets his thing and I get my thing and nobody loses, really. So it furthers a lot of integration.
We have an email here from Ron who asks, what if you take all reasonable and appropriate steps from dream to vision to action, but you still don't succeed? For example, an athlete trains for hours a day, months on end, engages coaches, listens to advice, puts it to action, but still doesn't make the team. How can people recover and move on if WHOOP still doesn't work?
Well, this is actually a very good question and a question which I'll sort of go into deeply in the book Rethinking. Positive thinking, and which also you get more information on our website, which is called whoopmylife.org.
And it's a great name.
It's an important question, because what if I do not succeed? Well, then I understand WHOOP. Then WHOOP can help me to actually cope with the setbacks and can cope with the failures. And what we show is that actually when you do apply WHOOP and you get the setbacks and you get the failures, that people process the information much more effectively, which are in these setbacks. They learn from that situation more effectively. And their self-view, their self-competence, their subjective self-competence is less hurt. So meaning you have double advantage. First of all, you actually get the information, which always are in setbacks. Sometimes, you know, setbacks are not only setbacks, but they contain information about what you can do better for the next time. And it helps you to keep on your self-esteem. And in that case, you take WHOOP and you apply it to the wish which comes out of a failure. Because it's not that WHOOP prevents us from failing. It prevents us from sort of going naively in the situations and just being unprepared for life. And WHOOP helps us to actually, deal with all the humanly issues with life as it is. And it doesn't guarantee that you never have a failure. That would be naive. WHOOP helps us to cope with the failures, to adjust our wishes in case we have a failure or we have a setback, and to deal with all these wishes which come along every day with the positive things which happen to us and with the negative things happen to us. So it's not a recipe for success that I will be then, the CEO of my company or so. It is a friend which we can take along in our life to deal in a decent and in a constructive and in a integrative way with what is coming along, whether it's positive, good things, or whether it's bad things. But it helps us to deal with the good things and with the hardships in our life.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak next with Camille in Dallas. Hi, Camille.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And this is a really interesting conversation. And these tools sound to me as if they'd be very useful on a day-to-day practical basis. But let's say you have an issue like a parent with Alzheimer's, and you know that this is going to be a very long struggle, perhaps, and a very difficult struggle on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes you just need, I think people need a sense of positivity, a sense of hope, that they're going to be able to get through this in a, you know, keeping their sanity and that things will turn out relatively well.
Yeah.
That you need that sense of almost like a religious faith or something, a sense of positivity.
What do you think about that, Gabrielle?
Well, this is a very important question. Now, as I said, for issues where there is just no possibility for me to act, then, you know, the positivity, the positive daydreams, the hope is what we should do. But for issues where I can act on a day-to-day basis, I can act a lot when I have a sick parent or a sick child. I can act a lot in terms of short-term wishes. So wouldn't it be nice in this encounter this afternoon to be present and not to be kind of distracted or something? Or wouldn't it be nice to find actually the best doctor? Or wouldn't it be nice to get off for half an hour if I, you know, am with my relative, with my sick relative for days? And I would need something for me too. So you can apply WHOOP to these more profane things and there find solutions that you wouldn't have not found if you just positively think about it. And then you also start listening more to your relative when you use WHOOP, because you can have as a wish, for example, wouldn't it be nice if I listen better, or wouldn't it be nice if we have a more decent relationship? With respect to that the relative gets healthy again, it would be naive to say, you know, I can do something about it. And there, positive fantasizing is probably the only solution. But for the mundane things I can do about bettering the situation, there you can use WHOOP, and WHOOP actually is very helpful in these stressful times.
Gabrielle Oettingen is professor of psychology at New York University and the University of Hamburg. Her new book is called Rethinking Positive Thinking, Inside the New Science of Motivation. Gabrielle, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for making this time for us.
Well, thank you for having me in the studio.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.